Suddenly, there came into our view today the Alexandrian ships. I mean those which are usually sent ahead to announce the coming of the fleet. They are called mail boats. The Campanians are glad to see them. All the rabble of Puteoli stand on the docks and can recognize the Alexandrian boats, no matter how great the crowd of vessels, by the very trim of their sails. For they alone may keep spread their topsails, which all ships use when out at sea, because nothing sends a ship along so well as its upper canvas. That is where most of the speed is obtained. So, when the breeze has stiffened and becomes stronger than is comfortable, they set their yards lower, for the wind has less force near the surface of the water. Accordingly, when they have made Capreae and the headland whence Tall Pallas watches on the stormy peak, all other vessels are bidden to be content with the mainsail, and the topsail stands out conspicuously on the Alexandrian mailboats. While everybody was bustling about and hurrying to the waterfront, I felt great pleasure in my laziness, because although I was soon to receive letters from my friends, I was in no hurry to know how my affairs were progressing abroad, or what news the letters were bringing. For some time now, I have had no losses, nor gains either. Even if I were not an old man, I could not have helped feeling pleasure at this. But, as it is, my pleasure was far greater. For, however small my possessions might be, I should still have left over more traveling money than journey to travel. Especially since this journey upon which we have set out is one which need not be followed to the end. An expedition will be incomplete if one stops halfway, or anywhere on this side of one's destination. But life is not incomplete if it is honorable. At whatever point you leave off living, provided you leave off nobly, your life is a whole. Often, however, one must leave off bravely, and our reasons, therefore, need not be momentous, for neither are the reasons momentous which hold us here. Tullius Marcellinus, a man whom you knew very well, who in youth was a quiet soul and became old prematurely, fell ill of a disease which was by no means hopeless. But it was protracted and troublesome, and it demanded much attention. Hence, he began to think about dying. He called many of his friends together. Each one of them gave Marcellinus advice. The timid friend, urging him to do what he had made up his mind to do. The flattering and wheedling friend, giving counsel which he supposed would be more pleasing to Marcellinus when he came to think the matter over. But our Stoic friend, a rare man and, to praise him in language which he deserves, a man of courage and vigor, admonished him best of all, as it seems to me. For he began as follows. Do not torment yourself, my dear Marcellinus, as if the question which you are weighing were a matter of importance. It is not an important matter to live. All your slaves live, and so do all animals. But it is important to die honorably, sensibly, bravely. Reflect how long you have been doing the same thing. Food, sleep, lust, this is one's daily round. The desire to die may be felt not only by the sensible man, or the brave or unhappy man, but even by the man who is merely surfeited. Marcellinus did not need someone to urge him, but rather someone to help him. His slaves refused to do his bidding. The Stoic, therefore, removed their fears, showing them that there was no risk involved for the household, except when it was uncertain whether the master's death was self-sought or not. Besides, it was as bad a practice to kill one's master as it was to prevent him forcibly from killing himself. Then he suggested to Marcellinus himself that it would be a kindly act to distribute gifts to those who had attended him throughout his whole life when that life was finished, just as when a banquet is finished, the remaining portion is divided among the attendants who stand about the table. Marcellinus was of a compliant and generous disposition, even when it was a question of his own property. So he distributed little sums among his sorrowing slaves and comforted them besides. No need had he of sword or of bloodshed. For 3 days he fasted, and had a tent put up in his very bedroom. Then a tub was brought in. He lay in it for a long time, and, as the hot water was continually poured over him, he gradually passed away. Not without a feeling of pleasure, as he himself remarked. Such a feeling as a slow dissolution is wont to give. Those of us who have ever fainted know from experience what this feeling is. This little anecdote, into which I have digressed, will not be displeasing to you, for you will see that your friend departed neither with difficulty nor with suffering. Though he committed suicide, yet he withdrew most gently, gliding out of life. The anecdote may also be of some use, for often a crisis demands just such examples. There are times when we ought to die and are unwilling. Sometimes we die and are unwilling. No one is so ignorant as not to know that we must at some time die. Nevertheless, when one draws near death,